Workplace meeting, Monday morning, 23rd May 1977. Farewell address. So now, the old ending is the new beginning. Here and now. And the periods of time which are represented from a beginning to an ending can vary from the whole life of the cosmos to a split second in our own consciousness. It is in that sense that I say the old ending at this moment is the new beginning. And if we are awake to this, there is no death which is destruction or a shattering. But the turning of the key in the lock of eternity, which spells everlasting life. First of all, my very deep gratitude and sincere thanks to all those, all of you who have worked so hard, so willingly, both in the spirit and in practical work to make this summer school a success, a harmony. We all know the kind of efficient and loving work which Valerie puts into her duties as secretary. Also, all those who help her. And to them all, very grateful thanks. Next year, Carolyn is willing, for next year, Carolyn is willing to do the secretarial work. And I trust everyone will give her the loyal support that is due to her. Let next year's organizing and concern with the procedure of the school be the special work, and I hope it will prove a happy play for the young generation. The older ones may take their ease, so to say. The young ones will do the needful, I'm sure, in their own way, inject their young vigor and vitality into what has already being done year after year by myself, who am the old man of the village, and my younger co-operators. So I hope that the next year will prove successful and happy in its own unique way, which will show differences from the way in which the summer school has been conducted during these years. The old man will be back with you, so don't worry. And then perhaps you may experience this rather wonderful thing that the old man was not so bad after all. And also the delight and charm of the freshness of the young ones introducing their vitality as proof of the continuity of the life of our groups. And it all depends upon your understanding and your intelligent cooperation. A non-intrusion of one's fixed views into whatever new thing may be arising. It's a wonderful lesson for all of us in the art of readjustment. So, I wish next year much happiness and fruitive activity. And now, remember, we do not part from each other as we go away to our own homes today in the conventional sense of the word parting. We carry each other with us. We carry everyone else with us in our hearts. Living together produces a lasting impress upon the psyche. The greater part of that impress does not remain at the top layer of our conscious mind. It sinks within. It continues to work. What elements of harmony there are promote the harmony of our own lives when we are by ourselves. What elements of relationship which remained incomplete or not quite understood are elements which it behoves us as serious religieuses to work upon. All these hidden effects will come up into consciousness as and when the situation during the coming months throws out some impetus, some impulse, which calls up that which is hidden in the subliminal regions of consciousness. These are great opportunities for learning and for understanding. Observe all in a state of peace within, a state of poise. Because in that state of peace and poise, there is everlastingly active this mysterious energy, this creative sustaining power, which we call love, which we call wisdom, which we call understanding with the heart. If there have been external irritations or matters which we didn't quite understand in somebody else, then understanding will grow if we maintain the right attitude towards the whole process. And it is not difficult. In fact, it is quite easy to maintain the right attitude if we are free from grasping, from wishing things otherwise. The moment we wish things otherwise, we are intruding upon the whole life process with our own limiting desire. And it imprisons us, and it prevents the environment, all the subtle aspects of the environment, which are healing and beneficial, from affecting our own minds and our own state of consciousness. These are the deep things of the religious life. The things which are concerned with the manifestation of the religious life. The deep thing, the supremely deep thing of the religious life, in essence, is of course the constant awareness of transcendence everywhere, all the time, through all things, and over and above all manifestation, sustaining it, bringing it to fruition. Relate all external life constantly to that transcendence. And when I say relate all things of the external life to that transcendence, be free of the illusion that we are doing so. If we start setting up particular thought forms of that relationship, we can never know the mystery, the marvel, the real splendor and perfection of that relationship with our brains. And if we struggle to know it with our brains, we are trying to grasp the ungraspable. You remember in that passage from the Upanishad which I read, where Yajnavalkya speaks about the Atma, one of the things he says, it is unseizable for it cannot be seized. What a curious way of saying it. He says it cannot be seized, he makes a positive affirmation, then comes the word for, implying that an explanation is to be given why it cannot be seized. And he simply says it cannot be seized for, it is unseizable rather, for it cannot be seized. Now you see the significance of that. It is the obvious fact. And when one sees the fact as the fact, there is no room, there is no need for formalized explanations by the brain. Like the child who says, a rose is a rose. It is absolutely the fact. Of course it is so. When you find that your own life is sort of swimming along happily with the stream of eternal life into that sort of state where you see the fact as the fact, you will see, of course it is so. And then whether the external circumstance is happy, pleasant, helpful, or whether it is the opposite of all these, you will have that spirit of course-ness about it. Of course it is so. You see the fact as the fact. Then you will find life easy in the midst of turmoil and difficulty from the environment. And when life within oneself is at ease in that manner, then your very existence is a benediction and a harmonizing factor upon all and everything around you. This is one of the supreme aspects of the living of the religious life, in which spontaneously and naturally, by the mere fact of your existence, you are doing good, benefiting all others. Because when oneself is in that state, in that spirit, one cannot avoid radiating goodwill around, radiating peace into the environment. So you see, the living of the religious life is a wonderful thing, really. It is the true, the only real, practical living of the human life. Your humanness has come to flower. And when your humanness has come to flower, you will find that everyone will naturally gravitate towards you with love, with respect, with affection, and feel at home and at ease with you and in your presence. Would there be any need for peace conferences and marches and demonstrations and all the rest of it? What are demonstrations but flounderings on a barren shore onto which you have been thrown because you have swum out of the ocean of life. Isn't that so? Are not demonstrations but a flaunting of the self? The most wonderful things happen in peace and in the quiet. Life begins in the dark, emerges into the light. There is a temporal manifestation, and then that manifestation disappears back into the dark. But that dark is the invisible eternal light, which you come to know for yourself whilst you are in the light, if you can live religiously. That means humanly, all day, every day. Exalt, thereby you exalt the meaning of the word human to its full stature. If we struggle and strive and say to ourselves, but it is human to do this, that and the other, then we are falling into the pit of selfness. This is part of the secret of true happiness. You know how when the Buddha talks of the bhikkhu entering the deep states of meditation, and meditation in its true sense means the state of at-oneness with everything. When he enters into the deep and the deeper and the deepest state, his very body, the physical body, is completely suffused. He says that there is no part of it which is not suffused with ease. That is the word he uses, with ease. That ease wherein there is no dis-ease, dis-ease of body or mind. That state of ease is the happiness, the true happiness, which is the crown of our material physical existence. And it is also associated with that state of utter ease, the quietude, which is the void wherein the plenitude which it is, which it contains, is manifesting as a perfectly harmonious cosmos. And that means that intelligence within us is functioning perfectly freely. And that is the crown of our mental being. And it is that state of seclusion which is not the absence of complete and total relationship with the whole universe, but that seclusion which is the true aloneness, the true silence and stillness, which is the aloneness, the silence of transcendence itself. Is there anything that we may want after that? Anything that is lacking? We are then that single point, a nothing, an absolute nothing. We are that single point through which the infinity, which is the large and immeasurable, is fully embodied and active in the infinity, which is the small and also immeasurable, because it is a point. So immeasurability meets immeasurability in terms of absolute being and awareness. The miracle that can manifest through man, through you, through me. Keep that in your hearts and minds. Cherish that. And if you can keep and cherish that, and in your own way, remain aware of this omnipresence of transcendence to which everything is related, your lives will be happy. And the world will see how worthwhile it was for everybody that you, the person, walked the earth.